Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2015, number 14. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. Today's podcast, as it is every week, brought to you by the Remington Trophy at RemingtonTrophy.com. I'm Travis Justice. Welcome in my co-host, the doctor in this Doc Talk podcast, former Husker All-American, Dr. Rob Zadiska. What's up, Doc?
How are you doing today?
You know, you and I have, maybe we've learned over the years, maybe we've gotten wiser over the years, but it used to be when the Huskers got beat, we would do an immediate podcast. It was that immediate reaction. Now we take a day, a two or three, to kind of let the dust settle and maybe gather our thoughts and come at it with a little more educated and broader view approach after the Huskers lose.
When you say dust settling, I'm picturing like a 100-year-old dilapidated building getting dynamited, and you get that whole cloud of dust that settles over like a 3-block area, because that's the quantity of dust after this debacle.
You know, a week ago you were sitting right here in this studio and you were talking about basically the ship being righted, the momentum was in the right direction, maybe they had started.
Hold on a second. I think the momentum was going in the other direction, but I also said this isn't a fix, that they're not completely back on track, that there's serious holes still here in this program. And I think I pointed out the fact that we made Leidner look like freaking Joe Montana against Nebraska, for God's sake.
Here's the interesting part of it. I was on my way home from Des Moines. You were just gotten back from the football game. This was probably the most distraught that I've heard your voice maybe over the last year and a half. The loss to Northwestern really bothered you.
Because this was, this is kind of like that Illinois game. This was a game I don't think Nebraska should have lost. And the other thing that made it distraught for me is when I looked at that Illinois game, when I looked at maybe the Miami game, which was maybe more a case of not making some position changes at defensive back going into the game with Davey, when you look at the Wisconsin game, a lot of these losses up until Northwestern I could look at, I could kind of hang my hat on, crap, maybe this is coaching decisions. Maybe this is fixable stuff. This is, we should be running the ball more. We should not be throwing it on first down. We should not be throwing it on third down. We need to be running more time off the clock on third and seven. When you're able to pin this on coaching decisions, it's easy to look at it and say, okay, there's a learning curve here, and these are somewhat fixable problems. I think the reason I'm distraught now after this Northwestern game is the fact that when you look at it, I'm not so sure it's coaching decisions anymore.
So now you're going back to talent? But hold on.
It's always a combination, yeah. But gosh dang, I really worry that as bad as I thought the talent holes were at offensive line and at the defensive back spots, I think that talent gap there is even bigger than I initially thought. And I think the fact that the coaching staff may have actually been doing an incredible job of buffing these guys up and maybe making them look far better than they really are.
Of course, the Husker Doc Talk Podcast brought to you by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy celebration coming up January 16th, 2016 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. This year's guest speaker, Lee Corso from ESPN's Game Day. And this year's Ford Legends Award winner will be Jeff Saturday, a former North Carolina player and, of course, former center with the Indianapolis Colts. Again, the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16th. For tickets, just go to RemingtonTrophy.com. But you and I had an interesting conversation before we sat down to record this, and this, I think, took place on Saturday night, maybe Sunday, was that the talent gap may be wider, but you also reverted back to coaching decisions and the fact that of the NFL mentality. And I want you to go deeper in on this, because there is a mentality amongst NFL coaches about the way you view the game, whether it's first and 10 is the same as third and 10. And I thought you gave a brilliant analogy on that. And I know Mike Riley wasn't an NFL guy that long,
well,
but
he was a professional coach. I mean, yes. Think of the years he spent coaching in Canada, and he was an assistant in the NFL for a number of years too. I mean, everybody looks at him and goes, well, he only had that couple of years in San Diego and he had a horrible roster. And well, you know what? He spent a long time coaching professional
football. So go into that analogy of the NFL mentality versus a college football coach mentality.
Well, the analogy that I was making, if you talk to most NFL coaches, they don't attribute a sense of, I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase this, individual downs, first down, second down, third down, fourth down. In college football, there's a strong sense of situational awareness when dealing with a particular down. When you're on first down, you're thinking, I got to cut this distance down. I need to get as many yards as I can on first down because I don't have an NFL quarterback. I don't have NFL wide receivers. Now, maybe you do, but those guys are few and far in between. There's only so many Cam Newtons. There's only so many Andrew Lucks, Aaron Rodgers, those kind of guys out there. Most college football teams have a pretty good college quarterback, decent college wide receivers, a college offensive line, and college running backs. 90% of these college guys, actually more than that, closer, about 98% of them are not NFL caliber. And so when you're thinking as a college coach, you're thinking situationally. On first down, you're thinking, I got to get as many yards as I can on first down so I've got a more manageable second down. On second down, I need to do everything within my power to get either A, get another first down, or B, I need to get this to a third and short as best as I can, because if you're in more than a third and two to third and three, in a college football situation where you don't have NFL caliber talent, those options shrink drastically when you start getting longer than about a third and three to maybe a third and five. All of a sudden, you don't have those options anymore. And a great example is Nebraska. Is Tommy Armstrong a good athlete? Yeah, he is a phenomenal athlete. He's got great arm strength. He's got good speed. The guy's got great heart. He is actually not a very bad quarterback at all, even for Mike Riley's system. Is he ideal for Riley? No, but he's not bad. That being said, if you have a situation where it's longer than third and five for Nebraska and you've got Tommy Armstrong and Newby and the receivers Nebraska has, that's not an easily makeable down. You need to try and get that to third and one, third or two, and then you need to try and punch it up the gut with a Zigbo or Janovich. I mean, that's how you get a makeable situation in these situations. NFL coaching, they do not, on the whole, look at individual downs with the same degree of situational awareness that a college coach does. To them, first and 10 is really not that much different than, say, a third and 8. A third and 7, 8, or 9 is not that much different than a first and 10 to them. They're going to look at that and say, it doesn't matter whether it's first down or third down. The way we get 7, 8, 9 yards, the way we're going to move that ball 10 yards and get that first down, we're going to try and do it the exact same way, whether it's first down or whether it's third down. So if you're a college coach and you've got a first down, you're thinking, I got to cut this gap. I need to get this moving towards a manageable second or third down. I need to turn this into a second and short, a third and short, best I can. An NFL coach is going to sit there and go, you know, screw it. Let's take a shot downfield here, because to them, it doesn't matter if it's first and 10 or if it's third and two. They're still going to take that shot 8, 9, 12, 15, 32 yards downfield because they've got an NFL quarterback and they've got NFL wide receivers. And it is very hard for NFL coaches to break out of that mentality. Guys who have that mentality ingrained into their coaching mindset, it's hard to break out of that. That's why Bill Callahan is in Lincoln trying to chuck the long ball downfield with Joe Daly. Never going to happen, never going to work, but they don't know any different. They're not thinking, get it to third and two, and then have Corey Ross try and bust it for that first down.
Look at you giving us a history lesson, bringing Joe Daly and Corey Ross in the same podcast. It's impressive.
Which he was an NFL caliber running back, which Callahan refused to use.
So why is it just based on talent NFL guys do that? Because you and I, just a couple weeks ago on this exact podcast, brought up statistics and situations that Tom Osborne knew. I hate to bring up the, you know, evoke the godlike image that is, but I think he knew at every down and distance what the probability of making it was.
I guarantee he did, and he knew which plays would give him the highest probability on a given down and distance.
So why is it so important for college teams to do it, and maybe not as important for NFL teams to do that?
Because NFL guys have Andrew Luck at quarterback. They got the guys who, you know, Andrew Luck can make a third and eight just as easily as he can make a first and ten throw. About the only difference for a guy like Andrew Luck is he's going to have two big 300-pound defensive tackles in front of him on a first and ten. They're going to put four defensive ends into the game on third and long. They're going to have some personnel differences to deal with, but in terms of the play calling, that's why you see NFL thinking coaches, they're going to look at a first and 10, and you see them taking a shot downfield with 15-plus yard routes by the wide receivers. To them, it doesn't – they don't worry about as much, and I don't know if worry is the right word, but to them, there's not a situational concern – about ending up in a second and 10, a third and 10, because they're going to deal with a second and 10 or a third and 10 the same way they're dealing with a first and 10. They've got the same play calling mindset on those situations. And so it doesn't matter to them. Tom Osborne's sitting there thinking, hey, it's first down. We need to get 7-8 yards on first down, because then we've got a makeable second down. If we get stymied on second down, we're still in a makeable third down situation. NFL guys are sitting there going, you know what, if we throw a pass on first down and it's incomplete, big deal, because we're going to deal with a second and long the same way we dealt with a first and long and a third and long. So it's that's why when you see Nebraska get in a first down, you don't see them running the ball every time. That's why when you see Nebraska get a third and two, you see them passing the ball. Now, this might be a little bit of an oversimplification of what's going on in these coaching heads. At the same time, too, as I'm watching this and I'm realizing more and more, you know, you've had five offensive linemen that have played this year. Nick Gates, who arguably I think is probably the best offensive lineman on the team right now, and he's a redshirt freshman, is out with a pretty bad ankle sprain. They had Zach Starrup in his spot. You get one injury on that offensive line, I think we're realizing how thin that line is in terms of talent and depth right now. And when I say depth, I'm kind of talking experience, because you do have guys like Foster and Farmer there. But those guys just don't have the experience yet. I'd like to see him play. It'd be really interesting to see how these guys look getting on the field. And you might see some of that getting out there in the next few weeks. But you see one guy on that offensive line goes down. Granted, it was the best lineman they got. And, man, that was not a good performance against Northwestern. You had a reasonable defensive line that essentially just kind of ran roughshod over Nebraska's offensive line for the better part of that game on Saturday.
If you like what the doctor is saying, you can also follow him during the week on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports on Twitter. If you found us through HuskerMax.com, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate HuskerMax being a supporter of the Doc Talk podcast. And of course, when you need Husker news each and every day that's up to date and fresh, go to HuskerMax.com. The Husker is going to be on the road this weekend, 11 o'clock game against Purdue. Yes, the Purdue Boilermakers. If you're looking for a place to watch the game, try the Benson Brewery. There's no better place than the Benson Brewery, located in the heart of Benson, and now open the Party Room, which features four 84-inch projection TVs, so plenty of room to watch the Huskers. And with the holidays coming up, book your holiday party at the Benson Brewery. So we're mentioning Purdue, Rob. And this team is horrible. And it's 1-6. Its only win against a Division I AA school in Indiana State. And for some reason, Purdue plays worse at home than it does on the road. It gave Michigan State a good game on the road, losing 24-21. It was close with Wisconsin last week till late. The Badgers pulled away and won 24-7. This should be a game. It won't be one to read in maybe as much as we did Minnesota. But this is a... This is a win, isn't it? Isn't this a win? Your silence, your silence scares me.
I think this is, if there is a near guaranteed win, this is probably it, at least at this point in the season. These guys are horrible. You know, when people talk about flukes, the fluke for these guys was that game against Michigan State. I think that was a massive, massive letdown game by Michigan State more than anything. These guys just are horrible. I think Daryl Hayes, I feel bad because I think he's
going to get fired.
He's a decent guy, but I'm sure he's gone after this season. I'm almost surprised they haven't gone ahead and made a coaching change at this point, because that seems to be sort of the trend.
Which I don't get.
Make the coaching change now, and then you can get started on recruiting. Yeah, the recruits, quote-unquote. See, things happen so early anymore. When I was in high school, if you forget oral commitments, I mean, if you gave an oral commitment halfway through your senior season in high school, that was an early commit. Now when you got guys making oral commitments as sophomores and juniors in high school and then leaving high school at the middle of their senior year to enroll in college, you got to get started early. And so I understand the fact you make the coaching change, you put in an interim guy so you can start looking. And then moment the season's over, with it's kind of thing like they did with Pelini and Riley. I mean, you fire Pelini one day, what was it, like 11 days later, you've got the new coach hired. By the time they're prepping for a bowl game, Riley's already out recruiting. So I think it makes sense in that regard. So, you know, if Nebraska goes into West Lafayette and knocks these guys off, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they make a change at this point in the season, because basically you've got a few weeks left in the season, essentially 3-4 games. You can start looking. You know that pool's going to start growing out there. I mean, you look at a team like Wisconsin a few years ago where Bielema left, I mean, basically after the last regular season game, essentially.
Well, the Big Ten Championship
game. Yeah. But it gives you put an interim in, and Daryl Hazel can move on. Purdue can start looking for a new guy. It wouldn't surprise me if they fire him before the season ends.
But the big question about the Purdue game, and you know, we don't need to dive into Purdue because Purdue's not going to have anybody at the game. Probably be more Husker fans in West Lafayette than there will be Boilermaker fans. It's a program that's fallen just way, way off since the days of Kyle Wharton and Drew Brees, and it just hasn't been able to find any traction. But the big talk about Nebraska now is the use of Riker Fife, and that is Tommy Armstrong's dealing with an injury. Riker Fife practices on Tuesday, taking the majority of the snaps. Do you think this is just setting up for the change at quarterback? Is the injury legitimate? Not saying it's not.
Oh, they don't. I mean, he was in a walking boot at practice. You're not slapping a boot on a kid and tell him, hey, we're demoting you. And, oh, hey, by the way, put this walking boot on so the media stays off our case about this. That's not going
to
happen.
But do you think it's time for a change of quarterback? I mean, what do you really have to lose? I mean, you're 3-5. The pressure's on you. Let's use Iowa State as an example. Iowa State fires Mark Mangino and says, okay, you're gone as offensive coordinator, and they're going to switch quarterbacks. You're 3-5. You're desperate to get to a bowl win. I'm sure Mike Riley is very aware at this point, if he reads the newspaper, listens to the radio, or watches television at all, that he's got to get to a bowl game. Or people are going to come unglued. I mean,
I don't think people are going to.
You don't think so?
And we had 2 years under Callahan where we didn't go to a bowl game.
And he got fired.
And he did. But I think that first year, I mean, think about all the streaks that fell.
Oh, I know. I remember it. I remember it. Another game, another season. I'll never forget the quote.
No, I know. And there's only one streak left. And I got to be honest with you. People are still going to buy the damn tickets. Now, I don't know if they're going to go to the game, but people are still going to buy the tickets. So I don't see that one falling. I want Nebraska to go to a bowl game. I think Riley's going to try and do everything he can to win these games. I really do. Now, if that means making a quarterback change, it wouldn't surprise me if Fife goes in and starts. In terms of a skill set, he's probably a little bit more classically suited to what Riley's used to working with. I think he's got a probably a little bit better classic passing arm. Now, I say that, but it's kind of based upon spring games and what the kid did in high school. We say that. We look at him and go, well, he's kind of a taller white kid from Grand Island. I bet he passes the ball pretty well.
But now, is that what Nebraska, people, does Nebraska need to pass
well,
more?
Well, people who've watched practice, though, have also told me that, you know, in terms of arm strength and accuracy, Tommy Armstrong still got the edge over him. In terms of that, it's so I don't know. This will be interesting. I mean, I think Fife might be a guy who might be more inclined to take his 2-3-5-step drops and just let the ball go, and the receiver better be where the receiver is supposed to be. Basically, I could see him throwing the ball on time with a little bit more punctuality than Armstrong. And this is only a speculation, because you got a guy like Armstrong, as good as an athlete as he is, as fast as he is, he might be willing to hold on to that ball a little bit longer and see if somebody breaks open farther downfield. But with a guy like Fife, Fife may know he doesn't have that ability. He's going to take his 3-step drop, and that ball is going to be gone at the time it's supposed to be gone, and he's not going to hold on to it. So you might see a little bit of sharpness brought back to the passing game. You know, when you look at more of a West Coast-style offense, it's all timing. I mean, you look at the classic West Coast guys. When you look about quick-release quarterbacks, the guys who have done it well and do it well, Dan Marino, Troy Aikman, Aaron Rodgers, those were your classic West Coast guys. They took their 3-step drops, their 5-step drops, their 7-step drops. Moment that foot planted on that last step, moment that right foot plants on those drops, for those quarterbacks, their arm's in motion and the ball's gone. If the receiver's not there, it's an incomplete pass. If the receiver's there, the ball's going to be perfectly timed, right where it's supposed to be, right when it's supposed to be. So I could see a guy like Fife, who's not going to be able to rely on his legs as much as a guy like Armstrong, taking his drops, and the ball's going to be gone, and it might sharpen up the passing game a little bit. You know, I don't see it as a major detriment to the running game, because I'm not sure in Riley's offense if Tommy Armstrong was adding that much to the running game.
You know, you say you want Nebraska to go to a bowl game, and there's still a possibility of that. They need 3 more wins out of the last 4. They have Purdue next, followed by Michigan State, Rutgers, and Iowa. Do you think Nebraska goes to a bowl game?
I'm getting close to it, and here's why. I mean, I think you might be speculating on this as well, because there's been a lot of talk in the media about how you've got X number of bowl games, but you've got an unusual level of parity within Division I college football this year. And what I mean by that is freakishly top-heavy. And there's a lot of teams right now around the country sitting with these 2-6, 3-5, 4-4 records out there. There's a lot of speculation that there's going to be more open bowl game slots than there are teams with 6 wins.
So you're saying Nebraska goes with a losing record?
Well, they're talking about they're thinking statistically right now there's a high chance that there's going to be a number of 5-7 teams going to bowl games, just because there's so many damn bowl games out there. And so Nebraska theoretically might fall into a position where they could get a bowl game invite. Granted, it ain't going to be a good one. Probably going to be in some. It's going to be played in like Duluth or someplace like that.
I mean, but if they go out of the last 4, I think 2-2 is realistic. If they go 3-1, it's a bonus. 4-4 exceeded anybody's expectations. Agree?
Agree. And honestly, the only, you know, everybody likes to do these. Okay, which one of these is a sure win? The only sure win I'm looking at is Purdue.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean,
Rutgers isn't great.
Rutgers hung for about 2.5, 3 quarters with Ohio State at home, and then they just got snowplowed by talent in the latter half of the third, early fourth quarter. I mean, Rutgers gave Michigan State fits. It's they they're they're better than their record shows, although I think Nebraska's better than their record shows. But I us going out to Rutgers is by no means a, yeah, we should win this game.
Of course, Rutgers also a possible coaching change at the end of the year. Hey, folks, when you're looking for a good lunch, go to the Chicago Doghouse at 3157 Farnham. Walk in, tell Kelly Keegan, said, hey, I heard you on the Doc Talk podcast, and, you know, order a Butkus, order a Vienna hot dog. He'll serve it up Chicago style or any style you want. It's the Chicago Doghouse, 3157 Farnham in Omaha, or game day before and after the game at the Weenie Wagon at 9th
And they're healthy, too.
They are. You know what?
You know, you look at all the toppings he throws on there.
It's like a salad.
Dude, it's like a delicious salad.
Hey, stepping outside of Nebraska for a little bit, Jerry Kill has retired effective immediately, citing health problems. You're a doctor. Here's a guy that's beat cancer. He's had epilepsy. He hasn't had an episode on the sideline for, God, it seems like a long time. But I think the Big Ten lost a good guy here. I mean, he's a good – what he's been able to do at Minnesota is – sure, he's 29-29 at Minnesota, but he went to a January 1 bowl game last year. He made them competitive again.
He did, and this is a guy that I think in terms of what he's brought to Minnesota, he has probably laid a better foundation up there than any coach I've seen in a while. And they've had – Glenn Mason had a really solid run up there. He did okay, went to a couple of bowl games.
But nothing like Kill.
No, but what Kill has done, the biggest thing that he did is he kind of made them relevant, and he's gotten them to the point where they've built the new stadium, recruiting's getting better, that they've played good football. I mean, in the past, when you had coaches up there, they had teams that won up there. I don't know if they had that foundation, though. And he's brought in a good group of coaches. You and I were talking about this. Tracy Clay's taking over as head coach. He's the guy who basically kind of ran the show for Minnesota when Kill's been out with health reasons in the past. And he is a very, very good coach. And also he's kind of another one of those guys who, a lot like Jerry Kill, kind of falls into that category, sort of the good guys of the game. I think Minnesota's going to be very fine without Jerry Kill. With Clay's running the show up there. That being said, this is a guy who built a foundation, and I think that's something that oftentimes athletic departments don't allow coaches to do. He was given a nice long leash, given time to get his people in there, get his recruits in there, and all of a sudden, Minnesota's kind of a relevant team now. I mean, before the season started, you and I had them pick to win the West Division. I think that loss of Max Williams at tight end really hurt them. But again, this is a team that I think is attracting recruits and is going to be decent for a while, and I think they're only going to get better under Clay.
Well, and I hope they give Clay the head coaching job permanently, because he's been with Jerry Kill, I think, 21 years. A lot of people say, you know, they've worked so well together, and obviously a big part of the success. So you hope a guy like that gets his chance and then make it a seamless transition, because there's nothing wrong with the Minnesota program. It's not like they need to start over again. They've got a culture set up, and there's a perfect case of handing it over to the assistant coach and hoping that culture carries over.
Well, and the nice thing about it is that he's got a track record.
Yes.
There. He's gone big chunks of a couple of seasons essentially as the acting head coach. It's not like they're going to look at him and go, well, God, we just don't have a track record here. Yeah, he's been the coordinator for a bunch of years, but he's never been the head guy. He's been the head coach of that program essentially for about a year and a half under the time he's been up there. And so I think it's possible that I think it is a strong possibility that they leave him there.
Real quickly before we let you go, you know, Miami has fired Al Golden in the middle of the season. Of course, Nebraska lost Al Golden earlier.
He's an I-course guy.
He's an I-course guy. But it's amazing to me how many people on the national scale have just come out and said Miami's a bad job. It's not one of the seven jobs open right now. It's not a great job. You won't have a lot of guys clamoring to get this like the old days, because the expectations going in are going to be way out of whack. The facilities aren't good. The stadiums aren't good. The fan base isn't good. The pay isn't good.
The only good thing about that job is recruiting. Everything else, it's not your classic college coaching gig. Basically, it's like a small-time NFL job. You got okay facilities. You got an incredibly fickle fan base. The money's okay. the talent level's off the charts high. And when the talent level's that high, so are the expectations. And so I agree with you what you're saying. But at the same time, too, I think it's a job that if you're comfortable with those expectations, and a lot of coaches say they are, but they're really not. If you're a guy who's comfortable with just off the charts expectations, then this job is an absolute sleeping giant, because the talent they have down there is darn near second to nobody in the country right now.
The words and wisdom of Dr. Rob Zadiska. You can follow him on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Don't forget about the Remington Trophy presentation coming up on January 16th, 2016 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Lee Corso from ESPN will be your featured speaker. Jeff Saturday will be the Ford Legends Award winner. And we'll still find out in about a month, a little over a month, of who the Remington Trophy president or Remington Trophy winner will be. Lots of good candidates out there this year as well. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. We'll talk to you next week as the Huskers will be getting ready for a showdown with Michigan State. I know a game Rob will be looking forward to. We'll talk to you next week.